It's really figuring out quality and quantity, and it's really making sure that the diet has consistently whole unprocessed foods in it, and then making sure that we're not eating too much. And we're all at a different point in that spectrum, right? So some of us, you can kind of continue on that spectrum forever of like kind of keep making changes, or if you hit a rough patch in your life for job, stress, life, family, whatever, that you just have to recommit and shoot, do most of my meals look like real food and am I not eating too much? And that's sort of my belief for the 99% that we all, I'm there. I mean, I'm pretty into this and I still, I'm like, okay, I got to recommit to doing better on eating whole unprocessed foods and oh, I can't eat too much. So that's really my belief in just having people understand that in their diet and not trying to do anything fancy, but just kind of understand, okay, yeah, I went out on the weekend and had too much. That was too much. I can't do that every weekend, that type of thing.
This is episode number 95 with EC Sinkowski. This episode is brought to you by a company that's made my life significantly easier, and that's Thrive Market. Thrive Market is an online marketplace, and they're on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everyone. It allows you to shop for thousands of the best-selling non-GMO foods and natural products, always at 25 to 50% below retail prices. But as a Pursuing Health listener, you'll receive an additional 25% off your first purchase, plus a free 30-day trial if you visit www.thrivemarket.com/ph. My husband Danny and I have been ordering from Thrive Market for years, and it's helped us to maximize our efficiency with grocery shopping and meal prep in the midst of our busy schedules through medical training. Using Thrive Market, we can shop for all of our staple grocery items, things like nut butters, cooking oils, snacks, dressings, coffee and tea, even personal care products, eco-friendly cleaning supplies, and non-toxic beauty products. We know that they're coming from a curated list of products we can trust. Whether you're looking for paleo, vegan, ketogenic, gluten-free, non-GMO, sustainably farmed, fair trade certified, or any of 80 plus other types of products, you can easily find them by filtering on Thrive Market's platform. And they're all at prices 25 to 50% below retail. Even better, these items are shipped straight to your doorstep, so you never have to worry about the time or hassle of grocery shopping. Here's a few other reasons to love Thrive Market. First, they're the very first company in the country to go 100% zero waste. All of their packaging, boxes, and inserts are made from recycled paper and are recyclable themselves. They're the largest retailer in the country that sells exclusively non-GMO groceries, and more than 70% of the Thrive Market catalog cannot be found on Amazon. It provides greater access to high-quality products at prices comparable to conventional products in supermarkets. This helps to decrease the barriers to healthy living for everyone. We also have the opportunity to vote with our forks every single day to change our food environment in this country, and Thrive Market can help us do so by supporting companies that are also working towards this mission and producing high-quality, healthy, and sustainable foods. So that's why I love Thrive. Thrive's mission again is to make healthy living easy and approachable to everyone, and this aligns perfectly with my own personal mission and that of Pursuing Health. Because it's been such a lifesaver for me, I wanted to share the benefits of Thrive Market with all of you, and they've responded with an amazing offer. So once again, head to thrivemarket.com/ph to receive 25% off your first purchase plus a free 30-day trial. Again, this is on top of their already 25 to 50% below retail prices. Why not try it out and do your grocery shopping from home this week? I hope you can take advantage of this offer and enjoy their service as much as I have. Once again, head to thrivemarket.com/ph to learn more. No discount code necessary, just shop around and the discount will be applied at checkout. This episode is brought to you by ButcherBox. ButcherBox delivers 100% grass-fed and finished beef, free-range organic chicken, and heritage breed pork directly to your doorstep. Now, I think meat can have a place in a well-rounded diet, but there is a huge, huge difference when it comes to animals raised in feedlots that are fed primarily corn and soy and routinely given growth hormones and antibiotics, and those that are responsibly raised, fed their natural diet, and never given growth hormones or antibiotics. ButcherBox gives me some peace of mind, knowing that I can trust my meat is the highest quality out there and that it will taste amazing. They allow you to order curated or custom boxes of meat, and they always come with recipe ideas for you to explore. My husband Danny and I are super excited about firing up our backyard grill this summer to enjoy our ButcherBox selections with tons of vegetables from our local CSA. And you can join us. ButcherBox is extending an awesome offer to you for listening to Pursuing Health. Just head to butcherbox.com/Julie for $20 off your order, plus a free order of their delicious bacon. Again, that's butcherbox.com/Julie. Hope you can check it out and that it makes your life a little bit easier, just as it has done for us. Welcome to Pursuing Health. I'm Julie Fouché, family medicine resident and former CrossFit Games athlete. Here, I bring to you information and inspiration from experts and everyday individuals for how to use lifestyle to maximize health. Thank you so much for joining me. Now let's get started with this week's episode. Hey there, welcome back to Pursuing Health. In this episode, I got to sit down with Isi Sinkowski, who you may know as the founder of Optimize Me Nutrition, as well as the 800 Gram Challenge. We talked about all things nutrition in this episode, and I had a blast chatting with her. A little bit about Isi if you don't know her already. She has been in the CrossFit world since 2006, serving as a member of the seminar staff, a flow master, as well as the CrossFit training program manager up until 2017. At that time, EC turned her focus to completing her second master's degree in human nutrition and functional medicine, as well as founding her company, Optimize Me Nutrition. Optimize Me focuses on helping individuals understand nutrition physiology and its day-to-day application. We covered a lot in this conversation, from EC's personal story to the importance of food quality and quantity, nutrition for the 99%. We also, of course, touched on ketosis, macro tracking, fasting, supplements, you name it. We took some time as well to answer some questions that you all had submitted, so make sure you listen to the very end. A few reminders before we get started. First, this episode is brought to you by CrossFit Beyond the Whiteboard, the best workout tracking in the biz and the one I've been using since 2009. Learn more at beyondthewhiteboard.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, please head over to iTunes to subscribe and consider giving it a rating. It really does make a difference and help get the podcast out to more people. I'm always looking for inspiring stories to share. So if you or someone you know has used lifestyle to overcome a serious health challenge, please send your story to me at info@juliefouché.com and I'll select some to share here on future episodes. Finally, please remember that although I am now officially a doctor, this podcast is meant to share the experiences of individuals and does not provide medical advice. So with that, let's get started with episode number 95 of Pursuing Health featuring EC Sinkowski. So, welcome to Pursuing Health. I'm super excited to be here with EC Sinkowski. We are here in Cleveland, and I can't wait to get started talking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, for people who are not familiar with you, I wanted to start with a little bit of your background, and probably a lot of things that I don't even know about you. So maybe you could start off with just when you were younger, things you were interested in. I know you had a synchronized swimming stint.
We could
get into that.
That's right.
But yeah, what were you into when you were younger? And then how did you end up into fitness and nutrition?
Sure. Definitely interested in athletics growing up. 8 years in synchronized swimming.
Wow.
So that's sort of my claim.
So amazing.
It's always one of those fun facts that you share about yourself.
Yes.
At those intros. And then just different sports. Lacrosse was my main deal because I'm from Maryland. And so that's always big there. And field hockey. So always interested in athletics.
Okay.
And that continued through college, although I was more interested in academics at the time. Mm-hmm. Did an undergrad in biochem engineering and then a first master's in environmental sciences. But still always keeping, going to the gym 5 days a week, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that led into an environmental consulting career, helped kind of prepare an expert witness for environmental litigation cases for 7 years.
Wow.
So that was all that environmental engineering. But that's when I was still doing the Globo Gym routine and getting a little bit sick of it and all of that stuff. And my brother actually is the one who stumbled into the CrossFit website coming back from knee surgery.
Okay.
And knew I was athletic, all that stuff. And was like, you should check this out. And I did, and of course, you know, not at first.
You didn't like it at first.
Yeah. I think the website, when I looked at it, was the 7x1 deadlift day or something, you know?
Oh, okay. Not the most fun first workout to have.
Right. You know, you're just like, okay. But then finally, I was just so sick of my routine that I was like, what's that CrossFit thing? I got to find it. Mm-hmm. So January 2nd, 2006 was my first CrossFit workout. Boston had one of the earliest affiliates.
Okay.
So I was just like, I gotta switch my routine and I'm going to do it in the new year. And
yeah,
so.
New year, January 2nd. So, what was the affiliate?
CrossFit Boston.
Oh, okay.
I think they were... within the top 15 because mm-hmm. they started late 2005. So I was there right in early 2006 and first workout was Grace.
Wow.
And, so that's then kind of my starting in the CrossFit field. And of course that continued even while I was doing environmental consulting, but continued to grow into a different position with them.
Sure. And then, I mean, you ended up having a huge position within CrossFit. So how did that develop and how did you decide to move from the environmental consulting work you were doing into a full-time CrossFit
right.
career?
Yeah. So lucky enough, back in 2006, that kind of transitioned into the seminar staff position. Mm-hmm. At that time, I think it's hard for people to quite understand what the community was like, mm-hmm. but there weren't local throwdowns. There weren't affiliates everywhere. There wasn't a Rogue Fitness, you know, there weren't the games. And so what you did is you went to the level one.
That's how you met people.
That's how you met people. And that's how you knew people in the community. So I kept showing up at the level one.
Every weekend. They're like, where is
right,
this girl?
Right, I know.
When is she going to go away?
And of course, at that time, you know, they were 3 months apart and they weren't multiple a weekend. So
right.
it wasn't every weekend. But yeah, I mean, you're just, great, it's in Toronto or great, it's in Pittsburgh or great, it's in Santa Cruz. I'm mm-hmm. going, you know? And so that's really what led to my position on the seminar staff. You know, I kept showing up for them and they're like, oh, okay, she might be interested. And and it wasn't quite the same process that we mm-hmm. we know it to be now. So that led to the part-time work on the weekends.
Okay.
And did that for years as that continued to grow. And it was probably 2010 or so, I started doing some admin work for Nicole and Dave,
okay.
Just in the training department. And that, I think, eventually grew to a part where they were able to bring on a full-time staff member. And it was really for content, you mm-hmm. know, with the seminar course material and not just the level one, but beyond that. Mm-hmm. And that must have been 2011. So that's when I switched out of environmental consulting and was doing the CrossFit program manager position full time and then mm-hmm. still also working on the weekends as well. And it was great. I mean, of course, it's when CrossFit was
just growing.
Still is, but of course, it was growing exponentially, and it's just a lot of different stuff. And being part of that process and seeing it grow and help implement the courses and accreditation and translation and projects just on the software IT front, just to help the whole operation department run, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. And then I resigned from them about a year ago, and that's when I was finishing my second master's in nutrition and functional medicine.
Amazing. And I know even throughout CrossFit, you always kind of had a special place in your heart for nutrition, and people would always go to you for nutrition advice. So when did that spark sort of start, and then how did you gradually build your nutrition knowledge and experience?
Yeah, I mean, my undergrad was in, like I said, biochem mm-hmm. engineering. So I had a lot of the biology and the orgochem and all of that stuff, the biochem. And then my master's had a focus in genetics, even though it was environmental science.
Okay.
It was looking at plant genetics, actually. And so I always had this love of the biological mm-hmm. sciences, I guess just understanding us better, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, liking to be active and stay in sports, you know, nutrition's kind of a natural fit. So when I started CrossFit and, you know, like everyone else, oh my gosh, I've been eating wrong for years. Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably when it was really like, I like this nutrition thing. Mm-hmm. I can still remember being at my first level one and hearing, you know, Rob Wolf give the nutrition lecture and oh my gosh, you know, everything I knew was wrong.
Mind blown. Yes.
So that,
all that moment, the first,
yeah.
mine was the sickness, wellness, fitness continuum. It was just like, wow.
Yeah, totally. Just, okay. That's not what I thought it was, you know? So yeah, I think that's when I really started, and I actually thought about doing another program, mm-hmm. even when I was 27 or so. And I just, you know, I don't know why, I either pushed it aside or didn't find the right program mm-hmm. or not right now. So just continued to work with nutrition within the CrossFit space, which of course they have a very foundation of nutrition to mm-hmm. their program. So it was great. And then eventually I was just like, no, I really like this. I kind of want to pursue this more, like mm-hmm. commit to it. So that's what launched then the degree.
Amazing. And tell us a little bit about that degree. I know one of my previous guests, Umaro, who's from Denmark, I believe. I may be getting this wrong, but I believe he's Danish. He had also talked about he's gone through the same program.
Oh, cool.
and did a little bit of teaching there. And so I've heard great things about it. But can you tell us how you found it, how you decided that that was the right program to go with?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the program I did was University of Western States. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-year program in nutrition and functional medicine. And I don't exactly know. I think I was just continuing to look at programs. And I think what had happened prior when I was looking at programs, either to be an RD or something else, when I look at the courses, I was like, this doesn't really speak to what I'm interested in. I just remember seeing this program's class list, and it was like autoimmunity and hormone imbalances and GI. And I was like, this is it. This is what I've been wanting to take. So I'm not entirely sure how I stumbled into it. That's actually a great question. But I remember, though, by the time I found the program and realized I was super into it, interested, I had about a week until the next quarter was starting.
Oh, wow. So a quick decision.
And I was talking to somebody at the time, just, I don't know. And they said, you know what, just start. Just start. And if you don't like it, you just don't finish it. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, that's a great approach, because I could hem and haw for years.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I just got all my, you know, official transcripts together and whatever application together and just said, let me just start and see what happens. And then, of course, really enjoyed it and just did it full time straight through. So I was able to finish, you know, I guess whatever that is, just under 2 years.
That's amazing. And how about your own personal nutrition over the course of, you know, maybe what it was like when you were younger playing sports and then how it evolved with CrossFit and where you're at now?
Yeah. You know, I was higher carb, lower protein, lower fat. Mm-hmm. And that continued, of course, until my first CrossFit level 1 nutrition lecture, in which I was like, okay, let's do a more balanced macronutrient approach. And then I think I've gone down probably all the paths that people are still going down today. Yeah. And, you know, super strict paleo and autoimmune protocol and zone and, you know, super low carb. And I think now, after all this, I've just sort of settled back to, yeah, that balanced approach of quality and quantity is pretty good, with no real, I guess, hard line in the sand about nutrition. As long as we're trending towards appropriate quality and quantity, that's where I've ended up personally, and that's where I like to recommend people continue to look for in their approach to nutrition.
So on that note, let's talk about that. I know I noticed on your website, so also in this process, after going back and getting your master's, you've now started Optimize Me Nutrition. Tell us a little bit about exactly what that is.
Yeah, I founded Optimize Me Nutrition originally with the intent to do one-on-one consulting, and I think I might do some of that, but I really decided that I want to focus on general nutrition education and content and really help people understand the context for the nutrition choices and just, I guess, making sense of all the nutrition information out there, because I feel people feel like there's so many different views and they get confused, and I just want to be kind of a voice for them to understand that. Mm-hmm. And really be a voice for people to recommit to the basics. Mm-hmm. Always come back to diet quality, diet quantity, stress, sleep, exercise. I mean, just keep kind of hammering that. So that's really the focus. And then just using different platforms to get that nutrition education or that content out there.
And I know you have amazing content, by the way. But also, I notice you have a little PDF that talks about nutrition for the 99%, which I absolutely love, because so many people have, you know, so many specific questions and things that they want to try. But, you know, I do think that there are some basic things that we can all live by and most of us can benefit by, although nutrition is very individual.
Sure.
So take us through that. What do you think is the best way to approach nutrition for the 99% of the population?
Yeah, it's really figuring out quality and quantity. Mm-hmm. And it's really making sure that the diet has consistently whole unprocessed foods in it, and then making sure that we're not eating too much. And we're all at a different point in that spectrum, right? So some of us, you know, you can kind of continue on that spectrum forever of like kind of keep making changes, or if you hit a rough patch in your life for job, stress, life, family, whatever, that you just have to recommit and shoot, do most of my meals look like real food and am I not eating too much? And that's sort of my belief for the 99% that we all, I'm there. I mean, I'm pretty into this and I still am like, okay, I got to recommit to doing better on eating whole unpressed foods and, yeah. Oh, I can't eat too much. So that's really my belief in just having people understand that in their diet and not trying to do anything fancy, but just kind of understand, okay, yeah, I went out on the weekend and had too much. That was too much. I can't do that every weekend, right. That type of thing. And so that's really what that PDF speaks to.
That reminds me of that Michael Pollan quote, which I love. That's eat real food, mostly plants, not too much.
Perfect.
It's like, don't make it too difficult.
Perfect.
Okay. So let's dive in now a little bit. I want to dive into some details. So let's start with just quality. So you mentioned quality and quantity, or maybe we can pick, which one do you generally start with? If you have someone coming to you for advice or your general population that you're trying to reach, do you start with one or the other? Or does it matter based on the person, or what's your approach?
Yeah, I kind of let the person guide me a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I often feel like the person already knows what they need to do.
Yeah.
And they just want a sounding board, which is great. And I love being there for that. But a lot of times they'll come to me and they'll say, oh, you know, I've really just started having more wine and cheese at night and I've put on some weight and I'm not sure what's going on. And I'm like, well,
you
just told yourself what it was. And now we have to figure out how can we back that off and whether or not it's a full elimination or whether or not it's tracking macros and sort of understand what's really going to fit with their lifestyle. So I kind of just listen to them, kind of identify some key points and then figure out, okay, what can we put in place that's really sustainable? And I really think I took that from Berardi, who he really approaches the psychology of eating a lot with his clients from what I understand of read. And he really tries to pick goals that the client almost think are too easy with the idea to kind of build success.
Momentum,
and so, yeah. And it's like, we're not going to leap for the fences here. We're just going to make a small change that you're like, yeah, I can do that. And maybe that's not buy wine, or maybe that's, you know, have carrots instead of cheese. I don't know what it is, but it's talking with the person to figure out, okay, hey, we've identified these one or two issues. How can we make small changes to them?
I love that. And I think that's so pertinent, especially to this population of CrossFitters, because, and I notice it myself, so many of us are people who want to be high achieving. They have this, you know, almost perfection type of attitude. And so it can be easy to just try to aim for perfection and then you get nowhere versus starting with these really small things that then you can gain momentum and start to refine and make
snowball.
Progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
totally.
Absolutely. We can all do a little bit better on that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because the CrossFit community is amazing. You have all these people that are, like you said, they're super hardworking and they're super interested in this stuff. And it's this amazing population. And it's sometimes I almost feel like it's almost calming that down a little bit. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, we don't have to worry about perfection all the time.
Right. I think that, and as you mentioned, the psychological and the emotional aspects that surround eating are very important too, that I think people don't realize, even just taking time, you know, making sure that you're being mindful when you're eating, that you're not distracted, all of those things have a huge impact.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. And I love to approaching, you know, based on what the person's goal is. I think that's super important. So say we're talking about food quality. We want to eat whole foods, unprocessed foods. What are your thoughts around eliminating certain food groups or finding, you know, for an individual, what food groups they might do better without?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's self-experimentation is always great. Mm-hmm. Elimination diets can be super useful. I think some of the phrasing around some of those diets, we need to just be a little bit cautious with that. Great. I don't know, take out potatoes or take out beans or take out corn. Yeah. Give it a shot. See what happens. But I do think there's a little bit of messaging around them that they are so harmful and you must take them out and they cause all these problems. And I think that's where the negative thing is, that, you know, people start to stress about them because they read that somebody said that they're harmful versus really being able to say, oh, I think the corn is fine. And I don't think the green bean is causing any of these, you know, food sensitivity issues.
Right.
So that's my concern with it. I love that people want to experiment and try new things. I've done it, you know, I've taken all that stuff out, but then really taking an honest look and thinking, well, you know, it's fine with them in versus so-and-so said that they're harmful and now I'm scared to eat them.
Right. And doing a true test, like, did you truly eliminate it for a period of time?
That's a good point.
You know, add it back in one thing at a time, and are you actually having some sort of negative response, or is it because you're worried about it or because someone told you?
Exactly.
You know, that's a really great point.
Yeah, 100%.
Another issue when it comes to food quality, I think, is this big discussion about animal versus plant foods. What is the right amount of animal products to be incorporating into our diet?
Sure.
How do you approach that, or what's your general philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of those questions, we're never really going to know for each person what was the perfect amount, right? I mean, we just can't, based on genetics, to really be able to 100% know. I do think there's a pretty good trend in the literature that plant matter is beneficial. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean high carb. That can still be low carb. But yeah, I think there's some common ground with fruits and vegetables are good for us. And so that is something that I think people should have in their diet. When people get too extreme of cutting all of that out, I don't want to say that the research is conclusive there, but I think there's more trending towards the direction of plant matter is good for us. And there's a lot of things in plants that we don't totally know their effect. You know, phytochemicals come to mind, that eliminating them, I think, is more risky than including them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The more plants, the better.
Yeah.
Basically.
I mean, and I don't want to say vegetarian by any means. I definitely eat meat and support eating meat for protein consumption and athletic performance and all of that stuff. But it can be also done with a healthy amount of plant matter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What about the importance of eating foods that are non-GMO or that are organic or animal products that are, you know, grass-fed?
Sure.
Antibiotic-free, things like that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think first make an honest assessment if the quality is consistent. You know, if you're still eating processed foods at most of your meals, organic is not where we need to be focusing our attention, right? If you have the ability to focus on that, or if that fits in the budget, or if it fits with just accessibility, great. I think definitely include it. But I also don't think it should become to that obsessive point either. When you start to worry about going out to a restaurant that might not have organic food, I think we're at a problem there just from the neuroses that it creates. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's kind of one of the big factors we first have to look at diet. It's one of those things that maybe we finely tune things as we progress.
Absolutely. We were talking earlier about just getting all those big pieces in line first.
Yes.
And making sure that before you go into any of these details, like the organic or like the, you know, the fine details that you have all those big things in place.
Totally.
So kind of like you mentioned, starting with the big things like whole and processed foods, and then refining more into, you know, what certain foods may you want to eliminate using an elimination diet. Where are you getting your foods? Are you eating local? All those,
totally.
All those things come into play then later on.
Exactly.
Love it. Okay. Let's move into a little bit about quantity.
Yeah.
Because this is a very big topic, and everyone now is tracking their macros.
Yep.
And there are so many different ways. I mean, even just this past week, I believe it was, there was a study in The Lancet about low carbohydrate diets having increased mortality rates. And we get back and forth. We get advice about every possible macronutrient breakdown. Where do we start? Number one, is it important to track our nutrients? And two, if so, where do we start?
Yeah. It's important to track our nutrients. Depends. One of the phrases I like to kind of say is that there are diminishing returns on attaining perfection. So when you track macros to the gram level of protein, carb, and fat every day, that takes a lot of work. And that takes
a lot of work.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work. And I don't do it every day. Mm-hmm. And just merely because of the fact it takes a lot of work and effort. Mm-hmm. That does mean, though, that you're more likely to see that ideal body composition you want because you're putting in that final extra, you know, 10% or whatever it is. So do you have to track your intake? If you want to look like somebody who tracks their intake, then yes, you have to track your intake. I think I saw that on Own Your Eating lately. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a great point. Like, if you want to look like somebody who came out of a catalog for Muscle and Fitness or is a CrossFit Games athlete, you're going to have to be very concerned about your intake to that gram level. But I think with some education and with some maybe tracking for a couple weeks or a month, you can get some pretty good understanding without necessarily always having to do that every day. Mm-hmm. General balanced macronutrient plates. Eating 3 to 5 meals a day is always a good kind of recommendation. Smaller women towards the 3, large men towards the 5, assuming we're in the recreational athlete type of volume for working out. And that's just a great kind of great place to start, and you might not have to get obsessive to the gram. And I don't want to say obsessive. I think mm-hmm. the macros trend can be very healthy for people, but mm-hmm. just recognizing that that level of precision does also come with more work, and maybe that's not what everybody wants to do.
Sure. And is it something that you want to continue to do for the rest of your life, or is it something that you do for a short period, or if you have, you know, a certain reason to do it for a month or two, then
perfect.
That's different. But, and I think the point you brought up about perfection is very good too, because I think it does, you know, the more that you're thinking, it makes you constantly think about it throughout the day. Mm-hmm. I've noticed when I've done it, you know, I'm constantly worrying about, oh my gosh, I just had this piece of gum that has like two carbs. And do I have to track this? And so it's a little bit obsessive, and I just see myself going into habits that maybe aren't necessarily the most healthy.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. If people want to have the six-pack abs, sure, we've got our genetic outliers who can do that without tracking. But for the most of us, we're going to have to track. We're going to mm-hmm. have to be very specific in our diets. But know that that comes with a high level of attention. And if you're somebody who trends towards getting a little too obsessive, it's probably not the best fit diet for you. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it won't be effective in achieving the body composition you want. But we also then have to recognize the psychological side of it. Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. The other side of it is, I think now we're getting all into the psychology of it, but the other side of it is the kind of cycle that goes when you feel like you've fallen off track.
Yeah.
So say you're supposed to, you know, you think you're supposed to stick to this certain macros, you don't, there's this kind of feeling of guilt, and then you have to start over, and you know, I'm failing. And, I think that can happen whether or not you're tracking macros, just in general, falling off your kind of
routine. Yep.
Do you have any advice that you give people when it comes to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think we also definitely a couple of things. One, we always have to keep the long term in mind, right? Like, just because you messed up your macros today doesn't mm-hmm. mean that you'll never achieve the body composition you want, or you're totally a terrible person or anything like that. I mean, it's just like missing a workout. Well, you just go the next day, right?
Right.
So it's just, you just get back in it the next day. But I do really like thinking about diets from the perspective of sustainability and also restriction. I you know, and I know we'll talk about the 800 gram challenge, but one of the reasons when I was designing that was purposely without these super hyper obsessed, you know, rules that are mm-hmm. super strict, because I don't see that that plays out in the long term. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm pretty into this stuff, and I'm not super hyper obsessive about mm-hmm. everything. So how can we expect anybody to want to do that? And
right.
So I think that's something to keep in mind too. Like, are you trying to instill a habit or a lifestyle that just isn't for you?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a question that I get from people a lot is, you know, we're getting all this conflicting advice from so many places, and I'm just an average person. I like to do CrossFit. I want to be healthy. I want to live a long, functional life. What is the approach that I should take? I don't want to follow, you know, a specific challenge or diet every single month of the year, but what is the general advice or approach?
Yeah, and that's where I really like to then dive into their details. Let me see what your diet looks like. Just
yeah.
take pictures of your last, you know, your last couple of days and send them to me, and then we can make tweaks from there. And it's going to be probably include more fruits and vegetables, and it's probably going to be don't eat less, you know, eat less of the processed things.
Right.
And to get those balanced kind of general macronutrient plates, and that's it. But, you know, it might be for this person removing, I don't know, the going out with the friends. And mm-hmm. for the other person, it might be cutting back on, I don't know, all the extra fat they have in their diet. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's going to look different for each person, but the trends are of quality and quantity are always there.
Mm-hmm. The other question that I've been getting a lot, and that I know is a very hot topic these days, is about ketogenic diet.
Yes.
So when we talk about quantity, we can go with so many extremes. Like, obviously I think can all agree, we don't want to go with a super high carb diet. Most of us. But then there's these other extremes. Like, you can go all the way into a very high protein, like a protein sparing modified fast mm-hmm. diet, or you can go all the way into very high fat, like ketogenic diet. Is there a role for that in the general population, or what is your take on this recent interest in the ketogenic diet?
I was saying, somebody was asking about current nutrition trends in CrossFit. And I said, you know, we're in a washing machine. I feel like these things come back around
yeah.
a lot, right? So I feel like we've been in a keto phase before, and it's back again.
It's back.
I do think there's a great application for keto. I mean, specifically highly insulin resistant people come to mind. People that want to lose a lot of weight, you know, mm-hmm. diabetic population, something like that seems to be a context where it sort of, you know, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Then there is a bunch of people kind of in the CrossFit space who are lean, very active CrossFitters, and they want to do keto, and I'm not sure why. You know, coming back to that sustainability idea, it's any of these diets that are extreme. It's like, well, what does this look like in 3 months, 6 months, a year? I mean, is this really how you think that mm-hmm. you're going to want to sustain your diet? So I think that's always a good kind of check-in point. So from that standpoint, I'm not a big fan of the keto diet. I don't think that many people are going to stay in ketosis, especially mm-hmm. in CrossFit for a long period of time. I also have concerns about the microbiota, the health of the microbiota. Mm-hmm. I know that you can continue to eat plant matter on a low carbohydrate diet, but we don't know a lot about the microbiome, and that's really your food source or your source for the microbiota to live and thrive. And mm-hmm. so potentially you could be causing some species to die off, and we don't really know the implications of them, but yet we know the microbiota affect our immune system and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then from the performance standpoint, high intensity sports really do require carbohydrates, even through elite marathon times. And mm-hmm. so, especially when that CrossFit population comes to me and they say they do CrossFit, I mean, CrossFit's focus is performance. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the improving fitness part. That's the improving the work capacity right. across broad time and modal domains. And they do high intensity protocols to get them there. And so it's like, okay, it just sort of seems a little bit misplaced. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just don't know that really we have research that suggests that somebody who eats a mixed macronutrient diet in the appropriate quantity with whole foods is really that damaging. And so maybe we do see that some health markers improve with a keto diet, whether or not it's, you know, an overweight population or just a normal population. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we see something improve with a low carbohydrate diet, but I also don't know that we see that this sort of kind of even keel mixed macronutrient with whole foods at the appropriate levels is bad.
Right. Like, it's already pretty good. We don't need to change it. We don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Totally. So, you know, you might see a study that says one thing does one thing, but that doesn't mean that the thing that you're doing is bad either.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And I like what you said about certain populations. And I think it's probably like, you know, our diets evolve as we age, different stages of life, and maybe you're just starting CrossFit and maybe you are very overweight and you do have diabetes, and maybe, you know, for you, that's a good time to do something like a ketogenic diet in a supervised way. But as you come down and you're more lean and your diabetes goes away and you're doing CrossFit, then maybe, you know, your body is more prepared to handle a little bit more carbohydrate and you'll do better on that
totally
balanced macro approach.
And there's also that interrelation of that person, like that person is going to see huge benefits in the CrossFit gym mm-hmm. that have nothing, well, not nothing to do with the diet. If they're losing weight, some of that performance is going to be because they've lost the weight, mm-hmm. but also just because CrossFit, regardless of the diet's effective, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can have a diet of lettuce and if you've never done CrossFit, you're going to see improvement, right? I mean, just because you've not done pull-ups and deadlifts
right.
and all these other things. So I think some people on a keto diet will still see performance gains that have nothing to do with the fuel source.
Sure. And we were talking earlier, I just recently did a keto experiment myself, and I was talking about how I did see performance gains, but I'm not convinced, you know, exactly what was driving them. Is it just because I had gone from, you know, at the end of my intern year working out 3 days a week and, you know, barely lifting any weights to suddenly going back into a more of a regular routine?
Totally.
Is it because I knew the times that I had to shoot for so that I could beat them the second time so I could say that the ketogenic diet was
right.
not affecting my performance? I mean, there's so many different factors that go into it.
100%.
Yeah. So it's hard. But I think that still self-experimentation is important, and trying to do it in a way that is as objective as you can make it is always helpful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, somebody said this, but I love it. It's like, we don't have time in our lifetimes to see randomized double blind placebo control trials and everything. Right.
Yes.
So we have to self experiment, and
yes.
that doesn't mean it's bad. You
know? Oh, that's my pet peeve when people, especially on things that are lifestyle related and so low risk to try, when people use that as an argument about, oh, well, the research isn't there yet.
Right.
We can't recommend this. Well, it's like, well, why not just try it and
right.
see if it helps? And also, everyone has such different genetics and different factors going on in their lives that they may respond differently than the next person, that mm-hmm. you can't necessarily study them in a randomized controlled trial.
Yes. So, thank you.
Yes. the N of one experiment is very powerful, I think.
Totally.
And you also reminded me of, talking about this whole foods diet and how it's probably not that, probably pretty darn good. Now I think my perspective since being in residency, I'm in a primary care clinic with very general American population, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, patients who have diabetes, who have multiple chronic diseases. Mm-hmm. And it has really opened my eyes to just how resilient the human body is. And, you know, even many people who have terrible diets and are eating fast food multiple times a week and have stress and are overweight, they still can live a long time and are yes. very happy in their lives. And maybe they have diabetes, maybe they take medications, you know, they're still doing okay. So I think that for us to really obsess about some of these details, it puts it in perspective about, yes. okay, as long as we're doing pretty good with our whole foods diet and eating a general balance of macronutrients, we're probably going to be okay.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. It just reminds you, like, the human body is really amazing.
Amazing. Yes. Yes, it is.
So resilient. So resilient. Okay, so speaking more on quantity, but in terms of micronutrients, mm-hmm. this is where I want to really yeah. dive into the 800 gram challenge
yeah.
because we always focus on the macros, but really, like you mentioned, for our gut microbiome, for our general overall health, the micronutrients are super important.
Totally.
So how did you, I know we've talked about the study that
sure.
you kind of got
yeah,
that
yeah,
number
yeah,
from,
yeah.
but you know, how did you come up with this challenge? Why do you think it's important and what kind of, you know, what kind of impact have you seen it have on people
sure.
who have tried it?
Yeah. So the 800 gram challenge, is to eat 800 grams by weight of fruits and vegetables each day, all fruits and vegetables, cooked, canned, frozen, fresh, doesn't matter. And you get to pick which fruits and vegetables, all fruits, all beans, mix, all that stuff. So that's the 800 gram challenge. And the idea really was kind of first planted in me years ago. I was talking to, back in my New England days, mm-hmm. I was talking with Heather Bergeron, and she's, of course, got a great diet. And I just remember being at her house, and she was like, you know, you just can't ever eat enough vegetables, right? And it just was like, yeah, we actually don't really know, you know, like, how many do you need to eat?
Yeah.
I mean, we know that you don't want to just, I don't know, eat 20 heads of broccoli a day. Like, that's
right.
not it.
You might not feel the best.
Right. You might not feel the best and all that stuff. But you know you're supposed to eat a lot of vegetables. So that seed was kind of in my mind of, like, how do you really measure quality?
Yeah.
And so that was years ago. And then last year I was, you know, in the master's program, and I was just looking at food research, of mm-hmm. course. And at the same time in that summer, I kind of was playing around with a couple different quality metrics. One of the ones that I was trying to do was measure potassium of the day as a proxy for fruit and vegetable consumption.
Oh, interesting.
And then the data just that I was calling up in my fitness pal just wasn't complete on the micronutrients. So I was like, okay, that's not it. And then I was trying something else of, like, these different serving sizes of these different fruits every day. Mm-hmm. And that was a little complicated. And that's when I ran into the study that you saw.
Yeah.
And they looked at the fruit and vegetable consumption relative to health outcomes, and they just looked at it across all fruits and vegetables. And they found that the 800 gram number was significant because cancer risk actually went down at 600 grams, but cardiovascular disease, which is number one killer in the U.S., and then all-cause mortality went down at 800 grams. And so kind of with the mindset that I'd already had this kind of on the back burner, mm-hmm. I was like, that's it. That's the really elegant solution to
yes.
measuring quality. And then so I was like, well, what does 800 grams look like?
Yeah. They say it's 10 servings, but who knows what a serving is anyway.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, the USDA, when they talk about servings, sometimes it's 2 cups, sometimes it's 1 cup,
yeah.
sometimes it's half a cup, and you have to get it in these different 6 food groups. And I love what they're trying to do,
mm-hmm.
but it's really hard to implement day to day in the kitchen. You're mm-hmm. like, did I get my quarter cup of legumes and my half a cup of the red and orange? You know,
right.
it's just like a lot of little details. So I was like, okay, well, what does 800 grams look like? And so that's when I really started playing with it in my diet myself,
mm-hmm.
and just to sort of see, like, how feasible is this, and what do the macronutrients look like, and how high can I push the macronutrients, and how low can I push the macronutrients, and how do I feel? And so I did, kind of a couple months on my own. I did a kind of a month to track all the data. And then I quickly pulled in Nicole Christensen at CrossFit Roots and said, okay, you got to do this.
She's always up for a challenge.
One of my concerns too, and I mean, this might sound a little bit silly because that study actually was done on like, I think 90, it was a meta-analysis of 95 different studies. So they have a big body of literature they're pulling in. But one of my concerns was, well, I'm, you know, 6 feet tall, 180 pounds. Maybe this is easy because I'm a larger person, yeah. right? So I was like, let's get Nicole over here. a more normal sized person can handle this. And she did it and she liked it. And I was like, okay, this is an idea. Let's launch it at Roots for a challenge. So we launched it on January 2018 as a challenge. So we ran with it then. And that's when I kind of started posting about it. And some other gyms jumped on board. I also ran a challenge with Sugar Wad. We did the 800 gram challenge, had 20 gyms on board. And so we ran through that. And I've done a social challenge where I just post what I'm doing every day for 30 days. I had another, I don't know, 5 to 10 gyms jump on that. I've seen, you know, gyms just take the idea and run with it on their own. And so at this point, kind of tracking on what people are saying about it as much as possible and getting as much as feedback as possible, there's a couple different trends of feedback. Mm-hmm. Some are weight loss. Some are blood pressure improvements. Mm-hmm. Not that surprising. Really common. Oh, well, another ones are like GI feels better. Digestion feels better. Really common, though, is more energy and better recovery. Mm-hmm. So that's not that surprising either. I mean, we always focus on carbs and fat and pure protein for fueling ourselves, but you know, those need vitamins to run. So those processes need vitamins to run. So we also need the micronutrients, as you were originally mentioning. So that's not super surprising, that you're hearing better energy recovery, but that's definitely some of the big results. And then the one that I kind of thought would be there, but it's really cool to hear people say a lot, is just the positive relationship with food that it develops, because the guideline is the 800 grams of fruit and vegetables a day, but nothing else is restricted in the diet. Mm-hmm. They continue to eat protein to their satisfaction, fat to their satisfaction, any indiscretions, wine, dark chocolate, ice cream, they can have any of that. And then they even choose the fruits and vegetables they want if they're trying to hit macros. So there's no really restrictions.
You could eat all broccoli if you want.
Yeah. And
or all sweet potatoes.
All sweet potatoes. And then you can also have your ice cream and you can, I don't know, whatever else that people want in their diets. It's, I like to call it a yes diet because there are no no's. So that's been really cool hearing people talk about it. Kind of flips the script on dieting. Right.
And I love that. Focusing on, you know, increasing more of what's good for you and not restricting.
Right.
And generally, if you're eating that good stuff, you're going to feel better and you're going to make better food choices anyways.
Yeah. And what happens because of that quantity, what it is now, it fits on a standard dinner plate. It ends up being about 6 cups, not including leafy greens because they don't weigh very much.
Darn it.
I know.
They're so good.
They really don't weigh very much. You know, it's enough of a quantity that what starts happening is it pushes out some of those poor quality choices. Mm-hmm. So inevitably people's diet overall tends to improve for sure. So that's how you start seeing some of the weight loss and the blood pressure reduction, even though that they can have chips or popcorn or whatever, that they just are eating less of that because it hit that 800 gram number. They're too full or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that kind of that positive relationship with food, I think, too, one of the things that I was really kind of adamant about was that inclusiveness of all the fruits and vegetables. You know, I think there's some kind of these neuroses around some foods in the greater CrossFit space that I really don't think need to be there. You know, I purposely wanted potatoes in there and all root vegetables and legumes and corn and all fruit, because I think there's some really negative messaging around those items and it's just unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And variety is good, right? I think that so many people end up eating the same things over and over again because it's, you know, easy. They know exactly what to buy, how to prepare it. And so having to get to 800 grams, you probably end up trying different things, adding more variety. And that's good in a lot of ways too. You're getting different nutrients. It's good for the microbiome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I do with the challenge is I recommend like a diversity target where you try to hit six different things a day and try to encourage people to change what they're eating every day. And, And yeah, because there's a lot of things we don't know about. I mean, we hear about resveratrol in wine, and you hear about lutein in spinach, and these phytochemicals, and there's thousands of them, and we really don't know what they're all doing and how they're all doing it. And so it's like, to continue to try to have two vegetables in the diet, it's just sort of why, you know, like, why not try to be as broad as possible? That being said, if somebody's coming from a standard American diet and they only like strawberries, well, I'd love for them to eat 800 grams of strawberries a day.
Yeah.
You know, and I know people out there, you know, say a little bit that's too many carbs or that's too much sugar, but that really comes out to less than 100 grams of carbohydrates in a day to eat 800 grams of strawberries. And so it's like, I'll have somebody switch to that diet any day of the week.
Instead of potato chips or whatever else they're eating. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I really encourage people. And that's what I really like about it, too, is it encourages people to optimize it for them, you know, whether or not it's based on the macronutrients or make it as diverse as possible. Yeah. Or if you're traveling and you only have access to apples and bananas at the airport, well, that's just your apple and banana day. You know, it's okay. It doesn't have to be always this perfectly crafted, you know, plate of eight different items that hit all the categories and colors. And then when you can, you want to do that as much as possible.
Sure. Do you have recommendations for people about trying out new fruits and vegetables, or, you know, where they go to learn how to prepare them or how to find them?
Sure. Yeah. As much as I love the physiology, I'm not known for the
shopping and the recipes.
Oh my gosh. I joke around that half my meals come out of a Vitamix. It's probably true. you know, people that were following along on the social challenge, they're probably like, this is really her diet. I mean, there's lots of fruits and veggies, but it's a little, yeah, I'm not the best in the kitchen, but in terms of definitely in terms of kind of trying out new things, besides do it, if you are coming from, again, a standard diet and 800 grams is nowhere near what you're eating, I would recommend just ramping it up a little bit versus jumping right to 800.
Sure.
It is going to be a higher whack of fiber. You might feel a little more full, a little bit more bloated. And that's just because your microbiome's not used to all of that, right? So if you really aren't eating anything, and that's the beauty of it too, scale it, you know, scale it down to 200 grams and then ramp your way up to 800.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of would be my only real recommendation in terms of just, you know, maybe not jumping into it right away if it's very far from where you're starting.
Totally. And I talk about, I mean, we all fall into our routines, but I always talk about farmers markets or CSAs is a great way to do that. We didn't do it this year, but in past years we've joined our local CSA and you end up with these vegetables that you have never seen in your life. And you're like, how am I supposed to cook this? And they usually have recipes that they give you and, you know, or you just put them in the Vitamix or in our like Instapot and steam them or whatever you do. But yeah, there's so many out there that you probably have never tried.
That's a good way to do it for sure is the farmers markets. I actually, so one of the times, cause I've tracked my data on it for periods of time, just so that I can really understand what do these volumes look like and how does this play out in someone's diet? So one of the times I tracked the number of different items I ate, so the number of different fruits and vegetables, and and no, like orange peppers weren't separate than yellow peppers. Those were just peppers. And I only, even trying to be diverse in 30 days, I only ate 38 different items, which I was trying to be like, let me try this squash and let me get this root vegetable. Yeah. And, you know, and I thought I was being so diverse and, you know, I'm less than 40.
But still, that sounds like a lot. I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah. I mean, you really do fall into these routines of, you know, you just like certain things. It's easy to prep. It goes well. And, you know, we also have to appreciate that that's not the end of the world. Like, right. Like we don't need to necessarily push to having 200 fruits and vegetables in our diet on a monthly basis. So it's just kind of appreciating where you are in that scale. And if you have to stay in the routine because that keeps you eating broccoli, banana and potatoes, and that's all you have, but it's otherwise fast food. Well, we're doing great.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's stay there. And then if you have the time to explore these different things or you have the option to join a CSA, great. That's a great way to get more diversity in.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's true. It's about what are you actually going to be able to implement into your life and do on a consistent basis and not, you know, stressing out about being perfect.
So yes.
That's a really, really great point. And another point about seasonality too, I think like, you know, maybe you eat the same five vegetables, but they're in season. Like,
totally.
That's great. And that's how, you know, people were evolved to eat based on what was available.
Yeah, so, totally.
Now, assuming you're getting all of your micronutrients from your 800 grams every day, I want to talk a little bit about the role of supplements because those are, you know, more common questions too. Do you think that there are any supplements that if someone's eating 800 grams and they're generally eating a healthy whole foods diet, are there any supplements that they may still need to use? Or is it more of a case by case basis?
Yeah, I really don't take supplements myself. Mm-hmm. The 800 gram thing, I don't even know that I'd be willing to say that they're getting all of their micronutrients. You know, if you do 800 grams on one vegetable alone, regardless if it's even kale, mm-hmm. you know, you're still not very diverse. And so you might not be getting all your coverage there anyway. 800 grams of a diverse amount, I bet you're pretty close then, combined with, of course, high quality meats and some other mm-hmm. foods in the diet. But I just wanted to put that caveat out there that it's not a guarantee, but mm-hmm. it certainly is going to be a good start. Yeah, I don't really recommend supplements on a broad base. I think every now and then in some certain conditions or cases, there mm-hmm. can be some therapeutic use for them, but I really don't supplement with anything. Mm-hmm. Turmeric, I think people probably know that.
Yeah.
But even that, I go in through my ebbs and flows of it. It's just sort of like, I don't really know that that's moving the needle much.
Yeah.
And again, it's because it comes back to, well, how's my quality, how's my quantity, and if I can make big improvements there, then the supplements are just sort of, they're not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if I'm not sleeping well, or if I'm stressed out, or my exercise routine has fallen off a little bit, or whatever it is, it's like, let me dive back into those mm-hmm. than worrying about these over here.
Absolutely. I'll have to show you later. We have a giant bag of turmeric in our house. I don't know if we'll ever finish it, but
day
Danny got on he just bought it on Amazon and went a little overboard. So we're going to be eating it for the rest of
our lives.
Every
now and then people tag me in turmeric stuff. It's awesome.
it's so good. I mean, it's just awesome.
I was going to actually mention though on supplements, I don't know if you saw that post I did recently on vitamin D.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Which was very interesting. And I think it has been a big topic lately, especially in primary care recently. In our main journal, there was an article about it and about how there really isn't that great of evidence to even be screening for it unless you have a really good reason or supplementing above, you know, a minimum.
Sure.
Kind
the
of
current
lower
RDA.
Limit of
yeah.
Normal. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just what we have to be cautious about, especially with some supplementation. You know, if we see a study, even if it's a human study, you know, we might understand part of the system better.
Mm-hmm.
We might not understand the system better. And it's just sort of interesting that, you know, and that was sort of my deal. So I had, you know, for people who didn't know, I had what was considered deficient vitamin D. I think it was 29. And mm-hmm. I took this massive, under direction of a naturopath, wasn't just my own idea, a massive dose. And it only boosted a little bit up to 33, which at the time was still considered deficient because that was when it was, you know, all the rage to be over
really
70
high,
nanograms
yeah.
per liter, a milliliter or something like that. And, you know, I just sort of had this sort of kind of mental check, like mm-hmm. step back and like, does this make sense? Like, I'm healthy. I don't have clinical symptoms. What am I doing trying mm-hmm. to force this one marker in that one direction? And so that's sort of how I feel about supplementation. It's like, I don't really know that we understand the whole system that well.
I think that's such a great point. And, you know, there's things that we can measure and it makes us feel like we have control over things, but there's so many things that are going on inside our bodies that we don't even know about or we can't measure. And who's to say, you know, what impact we're having on all of those. Research studies are all flawed in different ways, and we don't know what the optimal levels are. I think that there's, and just like mechanistically, it makes sense that having, and who's to say what's normal, but having a vitamin D that's at least in what we think is a normal range mm-hmm. can help prevent infections. It helps the immune system. It helps your bone health. But I'm not too convinced that having extremely high levels of vitamin D is necessarily beneficial.
Yeah. And I think you have to always take that step back and just like, does this make sense in the whole person's mm-hmm. system and context? Like, you know, yes, we learned this one little thing about this one component, but hold on. What is the person presenting and what do they look like, right? Maybe mm-hmm. the vitamin D for somebody who has, you know, we need to work on infection or an immune issue or whatever. Sure. But the healthy individual, maybe the body knows what's going on here.
Yeah, it's true. I think our bodies are so smart. The more I learn, the more I think, you know, and the fact that we think we can try and figure it out, it's like, it's like, come on, people.
We don't really know. Exactly.
Yeah, it's humbling, definitely. Okay. How about we talk a little bit about timing of nutrients, because this is another hot topic, and there's a lot of people experimenting with fasting and time-restricted feeding. Do you think that there is a generally healthy way to approach the timing of your intake?
I don't want to say that intermittent fasting, you know, fun to play around with time-restricted feeding, fun to play around with. But it's really just a slant on quantity, right? I mean, even if you do, I'm doing the compressed window, but I'm doing my calories in the compressed window, generally people are going to eat less than if they let themselves eat at any time period. So that's really kind of at the heart of that type of stuff. And fine to play around with, but I don't know. Again, I don't know that it's going to be this panacea that people want it to be. I mean, maybe we just reduce quantity by cutting out dessert or not going for the snack or something like that. For performance, I don't think it's, you're going to see amazing performance with it. I think sometimes you'll see it, and that's just because you're excited that day to work out, or because you hit the workout hard or something like that. So again, I don't think it's this sort of awesome, amazing thing that's really going to change everything. Maybe if it helps you cut down on your quantity and you're overeating. I think there's also some really interesting research. Oh gosh, Stacy Sims, I think she now does CrossFit or has, but PhD and I forget, but anyway, it does a lot with women's training and really speaks to the effect of like the women's hormones on what we understand about performance and how fasting plays into that and not so well. And it's interesting because we'll see anecdotally, typically men do better with fasting and performance than women. And it's like, oh, okay, well now we have to also worry about estrogen progesterone fluctuations and how does that play out? So that was really specific to fasting, but just timing, again, I just don't think that people need to worry about it as much as some of those basics. Maybe the multiple session a day athlete only because they need to be fueled for the next session, but not because it's this magical thing that's happening. They're replenishing their nutrients and they need to have enough energy to hit the next session. But if you're the one workout a day person, I wouldn't really worry about it. And maybe if you want to skip breakfast every now and then, I mean, great, but that's about the extent of my fasting opinion. I'm sorry, timing opinion.
Fasting, timing, same thing. So post-workout nutrition, important for the general population?
I think you probably know what I'm going to say.
I just had to bring
it up. No, I love it, but not really. I mean, I don't know. I just sort of see it as just have some food at your next meal. It's probably going to be within an hour-ish because you just worked out and that's how the days go, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I don't really think the post-workout shake is where you need to focus. I think you're going to see more results from just committing to keeping your diet quality high, going hard in the actual workout, staying consistent on the routine, than you will with a special blend or something after your workout.
Sure. And I think I noticed too when I was doing this ketogenic experiment, I didn't do the post-workout shake because it was too high in carbs and I would generally eat, you know, within an hour probably more of a protein and fat meal and felt fine. But I do think, again, it just depends on your goals. Are you trying to, you know, really optimize your performance and going for more of a competitive type of goal, or are you just trying to optimize longevity and overall health?
And I would really also just couch that, though, the performance in like really people that are hitting it hard multiple sessions a day, because I'm interested in performance. I mean, relatively, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm still interested in improving in the gym and I'm still doing this multiple days a week and I'm pretty like stoked about
it. We still want to get, push our curve up higher and higher.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, I'm clearly not going to the games. Like, you know, I'm not at that level by any means. And so even if you're somebody who hits it hard one day a week and still wants to see performance, I still think you're in the camp where it doesn't have this massive change. I was talking to somebody actually, and not to keep ranting about post-workout nutrition, but they just recently said like, oh my gosh, I implemented a post-workout shake and I've seen all the difference in the world. And it just came down to the fact that they otherwise were just skipping an entire meal. You know? And so it's like, well, yes, that makes great sense, you know? and they're attributing it to the shake, which is fine, but it's also like, yeah, you just were missing like 400 calories or something.
Sure. And for some people, it's just easier that way. It's like, you know, however you're going to get your meal in.
It's true.
Maybe that's an easy way to do it if you're on your way to work or wherever else. So,
yeah, that's true.
So, yeah. But again, trying to maximize the quality of that, whatever that is that you're eating. The time-restricted feeding for me has been kind of interesting. I'm not sure. I think fasting maybe also has different roles in different populations, but the time-restricted feeding, I don't know if you've seen some, I haven't read all of it, but some of the research, Sachin Panda, have you seen any of that?
No, I thought you were going to say somebody else, actually.
So he has some, which we actually studied in my, it was like a nutrition seminar that I took a couple years ago. So this was even before he had all the most recent work, but looking at just eating within a 12 or 14 hour window. Yep. So it's not too extreme. It's probably what we should all be doing, but a lot of us tend to be working out late at night or snacking late at night, waking up super early, eating our first meal really early, and just the impact that that had on the microbiome and even on weight, keeping calories consistent, which I thought was really interesting in looking at like the circadian rhythms of the microbiome as
well. You might have shared that with me, actually.
Maybe,
now it's starting to jog my memory.
Yeah, it's still, I mean, he's doing a ton of research now, and I think he's collecting, he has an app, so anyone can track their you know, timing of their intake on the app, and then he uses all that data in his research, which is kind of a cool way to participate in research if you're generally interested. But yeah, so I think, I don't think we need to go too crazy on the fasting, but at least trying to have a 12-hour window I think is reasonable and not, it's not too extreme.
Be eating all the time.
Yeah.
You know, intermittent fasting, I think, was popular in the CrossFit space in like 2011, I remember, because I did it for a year plus, 3 to 4 days a week, and and played around with mostly 15 to 18 hour fasts.
Okay.
And did that. And really the most, you know, and I think it was for, I know it was at least a year, but a year and plus some a little bit. And the best thing I got out of it was just freedom from thinking that I needed to eat all the time. It wasn't that I had this massive performance shift or that I had, you know, significant weight change or anything like that. It was just that, oh, if I miss a meal, like the body still functions, you know, coming away from that bodybuilding, like
that's true.
And so I think that's great. Like, yeah. So people, when they do the 12 or 14 hour fast, it's like, oh, I can skip breakfast, or if travel demands it, it's just, it's not soul crushing if you don't have your Tupperware with you, you know?
Right. Right. You're not going to die. And that hunger does subside, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you get super hungry and then eventually you forget about it.
Yeah.
So it is true. I think we can all, we all get a little bit like hangry, so they say, but that does pass.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we can survive without food for a few hours.
So. The body has some pretty cool systems in place.
Once again, the body has outsmarted us.
Yes.
Very true. All right. Well, I'm going to take a few questions. So I had posted on social media some questions that people had about nutrition. So I'm just going to pull some of those up.
Sure.
And we can try to
definitely
address them. So let's see. Well, this is one that maybe we kind of already talked a little bit about. So it's from, the account is wall9591, and they say, counting macros is so much easier when you stick to the same foods most of the time. My go-to foods are for lunch and dinner are chicken breasts and lean ground turkey, broccoli or cauliflower, and sweet potato or rice. Breakfast is always rolled oats with protein, greens powder, and berries. I fill in extra carbs with bananas or apples. Am I missing out on nutrients by not eating a bigger variety of foods? I know tons of my macro counting friends do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, again, we don't really know all the things that are happening. So are you missing out? Maybe. I mean, you're doing pretty good though. I mean, you know, if that's the diet that you can stick to, and if you don't do it with that, you know, start eating too much, or you don't have as many fruits and vegetables as you already have, well, shoot, keep sticking to it. I'd love it if you didn't have that every day of the week. That would be more ideal. So you just have to sort of realize, like, what's possible. Can you get more variety in? Can you sometimes replace the oats with, I don't know, like a squash or yam or something like that, to get some more diversity in there? That would be more ideal. But also recognize you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds like if that's what you're eating every day, that is doing pretty well. Or even just, I think, underestimating the impact of just a little things here and there. So say you eat out and you eat something different, or say you, you try cooking one new recipe like once a week or once a month, or maybe you bring in a different breakfast that you rotate every other week.
Yeah.
Like there's little things that can probably make a difference. But again, it's like, what are those really small goals, and what's the really the most important for you to be spending your time on, or your energy?
Yeah, for sure.
So Psych Mama says, we already addressed part of this, but she says, thoughts on stevia and all other fake sugar? Also, GMOs and organic, does it really make a difference? So we didn't really address the sugar aspect or the sweeteners.
Yeah. Sweeteners. I generally, I'm not obsessive about them in the sense of never have them, you know, et cetera. Again, I think that if we're having that stuff in our diet, like what does the rest of the diet look like? You know, if you're having stevia or something once a day in the coffee, okay, let's not worry about that. Mm-hmm. You know, if the diet then starts to look like I have stevia sweetened all these natural products, it's like, okay, well, the diet probably needs to be cleaned up. And so I think it's just putting in the context of what are we talking about and what does the rest of the diet look like? Even if it's three stevia things a day, if the rest of the diet's really awesome, I'm not really that stressed about it, you know? Mm-hmm. So just understanding the rest of the context of the diet to make that decision. But the more that we trend towards whole foods and right quantity is really what we're after. Mm-hmm. And some of this processed stuff, and I know it might be stevia or it might be some of the more artificial sweeteners, especially for the artificial sweeteners, not stevia, you know, we don't see those in associated with health. And that's essentially what we know. We don't know exactly if they're harmful. We don't know exactly, but we don't see them in diets that are associated with health. So kind of trending away from that.
Probably better to avoid them.
Yeah.
And also knowing, like, what is it? Do to you, like, do you, if you have stevia in your coffee in the morning, are you craving sugar all day?
Or good point, yeah.
Is it like, okay, I can have that and then I'm still fine for the rest of the day? Because I know for me, I tend to be, once I have sugar, I'm like, oh, I need more of that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, if that's the way that you're able to stay on the rest of your diet, then keep the stevia in. But if that does make you eat more stevia or sugar or whatever, maybe not.
Right.
I love it.
Okay, thoughts. Oh, this is Laura Haggerty. She says, thoughts on how macros, specifically low carb or cuts in general, affect hormone balances and the after effects on your body. So going through periods where you go through this, like a very strict, maybe lower carb or very strict low calorie sort of period where you're trying to cut weight.
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's going to depend how low calorie, how low carb, and then how long. Yeah. You know, shorter cuts are going to be less damaging. Longer cuts are going to be longer damaging. And then I really just beg the question of why. Mm-hmm. You know, why? If it's to lean out, why don't we just do it with less of a severe cut and mm-hmm. do it in a way that might take a little bit longer but gets the goals that you're after and is more sustainable? So mm-hmm. Yeah, so I wouldn't recommend it for a significant period of time, but if it's a short-term thing, I don't know what for what goal, okay, maybe. But I wouldn't try to do that repeatedly, and I definitely would just ask, can we do it another way?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great point. Like, probably the, you know, maybe it's a procrastination tactic, and then people start too late if they have a specific reason. But
a goal date,
certainly it would probably be healthier to do it more gradually over a longer period of time in a healthier way.
Yeah.
And then seeing, you know, I do see that where if people do that multiple times and they kind of fluctuate in these yo-yos, that it can have impacts, you know, over a long period.
For sure.
So I think asking why is always the best approach. Okay. I know I've already addressed this. This is sort of a question actually that I just thought of as we were talking is, what about the role for, especially for men who are really trying to gain mass, they're trying to get stronger. How do you approach that?
Yeah. Tracking is good for those guys because we really have to make sure we're at a caloric surplus and we don't know unless we're tracking. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say the same thing about losing weight, but it's, you know, some guys who have high volume and just that metabolism, it's really hard to put on mass. So we have to track and then we mm-hmm. have to just keep feeding you more. Mm-hmm. Now, we have to also make sure that we understand that gaining strength doesn't only come through gaining mass mm-hmm. as well. Of course, that's kind of a longer term game, though. You can gain strength just by going into the gym multiple times a week for years, not necessarily being on a mass gain program. Yeah. So understanding that some of that will just come with time, but if it's truly this short-term goal, yeah, we got to see what you're eating now. We know that you're not eating enough and we just have to ratchet it up from there. Mm-hmm. But it's just as being fastidious as somebody who wants to lose weight, because if we're kind of up and down on the calories, we might not ever end up at a surplus.
Interesting. Okay. Kyle Kidder says, I'm having to work out in the evenings right now and I'm always hungry afterwards. Is it okay to be eating tons of food at 10 o'clock at night? Last night I had a can of tuna, a banana, avocado toast, and a protein shake before bed.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, that's his time to eat. Mm-hmm. So sometimes questions will come up, and what if I don't eat this, or what if I can only eat now? You know, I'd love for people to sort of take the approach, well, let me just optimize my limited context, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I can't do something now, well, how can I make the best scenario that I have? And it's just, well, that's your time to eat, and you're mm-hmm. picking some great choices. I think you're doing a great job. I mean, what's the other option?
Right.
Don't
eat.
Don't eat. Yeah. And then you're just going to probably start losing mass, which doesn't sound like is his goal.
And that's one of the hardest things I think about working out late in the evening, which I did a lot over the past few years, is that you have this awkward time where you're like, should I eat dinner before I work out? Then I'm going to be too full working out. And then afterwards, do you eat again? It can be challenging, but again, you have to look at, there's so many different things going on in your life, and you have to look at, you know, what works for you and how are you going to be able to get done what you need to get done. So
exactly.
Very interesting. All right. TK Horn asks, our favorite books and podcasts to learn more. Do you have any places that you like to send people other than Optimize Me and your blog and all of those places?
Thank you. I mean, I think I definitely, of course, Chris Kresser, you know, he's been a mainstay for a while now. Chris Masterjohn has been out there for a while. He still has a blog, Stephen Guiné. Mm-hmm. He's got some great research. I love, from what I remember, because I took precision nutrition years and years ago, mm-hmm. but I love Berardi's psychological approach. He also has a very even keel approach to quality, quantity, that type of stuff. So mm-hmm. those would be the ones, I think, besides just going to the literature. Yeah.
Those are great. I love them.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to start wrapping up.
Okay.
I first want to know, I love asking people about kind of their typical day or their daily routine, because I'm just fascinated and I'm always trying to figure out how I can more optimize my own daily routine. So it's more for selfish reasons, but
that's
awesome. Do you have a daily routine, or if you have kind of your ideal day, how would it go?
Yeah. This probably won't help you at all. My ideal day is
not
there is
a vacation
no routine.
Day.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Start out by the pool. No, I don't really have, you know, even when I was working at both of my prior kind of careers, I worked remotely or had a good amount of mm-hmm. flexibility. And then right now I'm kind of doing some of my own freelance work. And so I do have a lot of flexibility in my schedule, you know, and I don't have a family as well who's waiting on me for something. So mm-hmm. I have a ton of flexibility in my schedule, which means that the days they're always different. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes it's either meeting somebody in the morning or getting a project done, or sometimes it's working out or whatever it is. And so I really like that flow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think I crave a schedule, and then I'm like 2 days into the same thing and I'm like,
I'm a little bored.
So yeah. I don't. I do find though, and it's a habit that I don't love, but I do find that I can crank through some serious work from like 7 to 11. Mm-hmm. Like I can start
first
to get
in the morning.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's just a switch in my life right now or mm-hmm. just happens to be my current trend, but mm-hmm. yeah, I'm like, oh, I'll get this done tonight. So, but I really don't have a schedule. Sorry.
Well, that's okay. How do you
working out's in there?
Yeah. You have to, you know, have the big pieces. But for people who do have a flexible schedule or work from home or are remote, what are some things that have helped you? Because I know it can be really challenging to, you know, maintain that discipline when you're not in a work environment all the time.
Yeah. I think it's those big chunks, you know, know that you can kind of focus for 2 to 3 hours, and then you're going to need to definitely do something that's longer than like stand up and stretch. And so maybe that for me is the coffee break, or maybe that's the gym break, or maybe that's the go meet with somebody, but try to block it out like that, because otherwise you just get, you know, you're just totally by yourself on this island at home.
Right.
And then you might end up getting nothing done. So I really try to focus in those kind of chunks.
Taking the healthy breaks, the Tabata work, I think. That has been useful for me when I've been in periods where I'm just studying all day at home, is making sure you schedule those breaks.
Because
it's easy to just be like, oh no, I can go a little longer. I can go a little longer. And then you start losing your effectiveness. So.
Yeah. And how many times, I don't know, I find, you know, you step away from something, you come back with such greater clarity, right?
Yes.
So
that's so true. Mm-hmm. So true. All right. So the three questions I ask everyone.
Okay. I think I know them.
First one is the three things you do on a regular basis that have the biggest positive impact on your health.
Definitely consistency with exercise and diet would be the big first two. Mm-hmm. Third one.
I love how you said consistency too. It's not like, You yeah. know, it's not like anything fancy, but just having it consistently there.
Yeah. I mean, it probably the diet, you know, because again, I was doing super high carb, low fat coming into the mm-hmm. CrossFit space. I really learned that from just the exercise regime, and that mm-hmm. started growing up. And definitely I go through points when, I mean, I'm in and out of CrossFit routes within 20 minutes. I have 5 minutes on the bike, hit something hard for 10 minutes, and I'm yeah. done. And that's it. And I just know that that's better than nothing, and mm-hmm. I'll feel better. And so that's just ingrained. Like, the day just has a workout in it. I don't mm-hmm. I don't know where it is. It might not be this epic event. It might be, you know, 100 burpees in my parents' living room.
Yeah.
Like that's... it was this past weekend. But but yeah, that's just so consistent for me that I think that also has made the diet consistent. And again, I'm no beacon of perfection in diet, but I'm consistently making choices that are good. And mm-hmm. so those, I think, are definitely the big two. Third one there. Gosh, I wasn't expecting three, Julie.
Gotta throw in a curveball for you.
I think I'm learning. I don't want to say even learning new things. I definitely am interested in that and do learn new things. But keeping some other fun activities that don't have anything mm-hmm. to do with nutrition. For example, I love salsa dancing and I love playing golf. You know what I mean? And then picking up these other activities like, well, oh, and I love sketching. And it's not mm-hmm. that I do all of these things a ton as much as I'd like to do them, but just keeping things that are just very diverse from the nutrition, you know, focus.
Sure. And purely for your enjoyment that don't yeah. have any, it's not related to work. It's not like there's no reason to do it other than because
no, you enjoy when
it.
I duff the golf ball, there's no implication.
No one is benefiting from that other than you.
Yeah. It's like, it's not a big deal. I can just pick yeah. out another ball and keep going. There's no pressure.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. How about one thing that you think would have a big impact on your health, but you have a hard time implementing it, or something you're working on?
Yeah, I tend towards not always having the best work-life balance and definitely kind of fall in that kind of high-stress camp, you know? I think any of the, you know, people that want to be super productive and hardworking tend to have those tendencies.
Yeah.
So I definitely align there. And, you know, I think I've gotten better over the years, but I still think it's always kind of checking me and like, well, am I just stressing about something I have no control over?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think a daily meditation practice would behoove me. And I've gotten into Headspace a little bit. I'm not consistent with it. So if I could just mm-hmm. carry that consistency of exercise
right
and diet right over to like the lifestyle. Yeah, that's where I need some improvement.
It's so true. I think all of us can improve there. We totally underestimate the impact of stress. Like, that's such a huge, huge driver of our health. Okay, what does a healthy life look like to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's when your health status isn't limiting you, you know? And I don't want to say you don't have to think about your health, because obviously you think about your health by maintaining a good diet and doing exercise and not being stressed. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's when your medication or when your limit, you know, a physical limitation is not preventing you from doing what you want to do. And it could even be when your stress isn't preventing you from enjoying a meal or, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. So I think there's a lot of ways that, you know, if your health status can stay out of the way from what you want to do, that's a healthy life.
I love that. That's amazing. And I love how you said your stress isn't preventing you from enjoying a meal or
right.
even, you know, all these, we can become so obsessive about all these different health things and trying to be so perfect that then is that actually hindering our ability to enjoy our lives and do all the other things that we were made to do? So
yes.
That's a great summary of what
yes.
we've talked about today. Okay, how can people find you and follow everything that you're doing with Optimize Me and the 800 gram challenge?
Yeah. So website's Optimize Me Nutrition. Try to put out some blog posts periodically. Instagram handle is the same. Optimize Me Nutrition is definitely where I put more regular content. And then, yeah, I've partnered with a couple platforms for the 800 gram challenge. Mm-hmm. So gyms will be able to run an 800 gram challenge on demand at their gym with some nice,
awesome.
Hopefully nice plug and play content
yeah.
and good scoring. And it's just a good positive community event. And that's available through SugarWad and hopefully another platform to be announced soon.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to following you. And thank you so much for sitting down with me today. It was really fun getting to chat about all of these different nutrition topics.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you, Julie.
Hey there, thanks so much for tuning into this episode. EC and I covered a ton of ground in this conversation. And one of the things I love about EC is how she really translates the latest science and research into practical advice for everyday people. We want to know, what are some of the biggest challenges you face when it comes to your day-to-day nutrition? Let us know on social media using hashtag Pursuing Health. To make sure you never miss an episode and to receive exclusive content from me, head to my website, juliefouché.com, and subscribe to my email list. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and consider giving the podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes. Also, don't forget to share your stories. If you or someone you know has used lifestyle to overcome a serious health challenge, please send me an email at info@juliefouché.com. I'll choose some of these inspiring stories to share here on future episodes. Don't forget you can train with me through Beyond the Whiteboard by visiting trainwithjuliefouché.com. Thank you again so much for listening, and I'll catch you next time on Pursuing Health. This episode is brought to you by a company that's made my life significantly easier, and that's Thrive Market. Thrive Market is an online marketplace, and they're on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everyone. It allows you to shop for thousands of the best-selling non-GMO foods and natural products, always at 25 to 50% below retail prices. But as a Pursuing Health listener, you'll receive an additional 25% off your first purchase, plus a free 30-day trial if you visit www.thrivemarket.com/PH. My husband Danny and I have been ordering from Thrive Market for years, and it's helped us to maximize our efficiency with grocery shopping and meal prep in the midst of our busy schedules through medical training. Using Thrive Market, we can shop for all of our staple grocery items, things like nut butters, cooking oils, snacks, dressings, coffee and tea, even personal care products, eco-friendly cleaning supplies, and non-toxic beauty products. We know that they're coming from a curated list of products we can trust. Whether you're looking for paleo, vegan, ketogenic, gluten-free, non-GMO, sustainably farmed, fair trade certified, or any of 80 plus other types of products, you can easily find them by filtering on Thrive Market's platform. And they're all at prices 25 to 50% below retail. Even better, these items are shipped straight to your doorstep, so you never have to worry about the time or hassle of grocery shopping. Here's a few other reasons to love Thrive Market. First, they're the very first company in the country to go 100% zero waste. All of their packaging, boxes, and inserts are made from recycled paper and are recyclable themselves. They're the largest retailer in the country that sells exclusively non-GMO groceries, and more than 70% of the Thrive Market catalog cannot be found on Amazon. It provides greater access to high-quality products at prices comparable to conventional products in supermarkets. This helps to decrease the barriers to healthy living for everyone. We also have the opportunity to vote with our forks every single day to change our food environment in this country, and Thrive Market can help us do so by supporting companies that are also working towards this mission and producing high-quality, healthy, and sustainable foods. So that's why I love Thrive. Thrive's mission again is to make healthy living easy and approachable to everyone, and this aligns perfectly with my own personal mission and that of Pursuing Health. Because it's been such a lifesaver for me, I wanted to share the benefits of Thrive Market with all of you, and they've responded with an amazing offer. So once again, head to thrivemarket.com/PH to receive 25% off your first purchase plus a free 30-day trial. Again, this is on top of their already 25 to 50% below retail prices. Why not try it out and do your grocery shopping from home this week? I hope you can take advantage of this offer and enjoy their service as much as I have. Once again, head to thrivemarket.com/PH to learn more. No discount code necessary, just shop around and the discount will be applied at checkout. This episode is brought to you by ButcherBox. ButcherBox delivers 100% grass-fed and finished beef, free-range organic chicken, and heritage breed pork directly to your doorstep. Now, I think meat can have a place in a well-rounded diet, but there is a huge, huge difference when it comes to animals raised in feedlots that are fed primarily corn and soy and routinely given growth hormones and antibiotics, and those that are responsibly raised, fed their natural diet, and never given growth hormones or antibiotics. ButcherBox gives me some peace of mind, knowing that I can trust my meat is the highest quality out there and that it will taste amazing. They allow you to order curated or custom boxes of meat, and they always come with recipe ideas for you to explore. My husband, Danny, and I are super excited about firing up our backyard grill this summer to enjoy our butcher box selections with tons of vegetables from our local CSA. And you can join us. Butcher Box is extending an awesome offer to you for listening to Pursuing Health. Just head to butcherbox.com/Julie for $20 off your order, plus a free order of their delicious bacon. Again, that's butcherbox.com/Julie. Hope you can check it out and that it makes your life a little bit easier, just as it has done for us.